sit back, relax, unless you're driving. It's time for That's a Freebie.
You're listening to That's a Freebie, the only podcast that mixes all the latest news from my little world with interesting stories from the rest of the world. I'm your host, Diggy, and as usual, I am going to open up with an Ask a Freebie question. This week's question is from friend of the show, Chris. Chris says, we know your hatred for eggs, but if your child's life depended on you eating an egg, would you do it? Well, Chris, oh boy, is that a question. I think the honest answer is yes, I would eat an egg. I do have a horrible, horrible hatred of eggs. More of a fear than anything else. I wouldn't say I do hate them. I do hate them. So that would be a lie to say I wouldn't say that, because that's not true. I would say that. In fact, I did just say that. I hate them. I hate them. Yes, I would eat an egg if my child's life depended on it. I once ate scrambled egg because one of the kids begged me to do so. I think it was Fina. She just wouldn't eat scrambled egg. And my wife was adamant that she would like it, and she wouldn't eat it because I wouldn't eat it. Because of my issues with eggs, it made her not want to eat them. So I did. I took one for the team, as it were. I ate some scrambled egg. I'm not going to lie. I actually liked it. I enjoyed it. It's nice. I ate the full plate of scrambled eggs. This was like, what, 3-4 years ago? Full plate of scrambled eggs. I could make a mean scrambled egg. However, I just can't shake that feeling when I'm eating it of what it actually is and the flobbiness of it as it goes down my throat. It's disgusting. I just can't bring myself to do it. It's like, I don't dislike the taste of eggs. I used to eat eggs all the time, but no, just not a huge fan of eating them. So I would avoid it where possible. But yes, if one of my children's lives depended on it, I would absolutely eat an egg. I have, in fact, tried to recreate the flavor of eggs using tofu. I don't know if you've seen this. There is you can scramble tofu. I mean, you can do pretty much anything with tofu, right? The way you do it is you break up the tofu. I can't actually remember. It's been a while, but you break up the tofu. You mix it all up. You add a bit of paprika, salt, pepper. Can't remember what else goes into it. But you basically fry it up like you would a scrambled egg. Well, I suppose you don't technically. Yeah. Do you fry a scrambled egg? I know it's not a fried egg, but I mean, I've always done it in the frying pan. So whatever, you cook it in a pan and it's good. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I would have it again. I've had it several times. In fact, it's just that we only seem to be able to buy in our local supermarkets massive blocks of tofu. And before you know it, it's gone off. Like, it goes off pretty quickly, or it goes off quicker than I would eat it. And I don't know if you've ever seen tofu when it goes off, it turns purple. Really puts you off wanting to eat it. Oh no, don't tell me I've just unlocked another fear. No, I've not unlocked enough of fear. We're fine. If you would like to ask a question to open up the show, just head over to the show notes or go to thatsafreebie.com, where you will find a link to the new multi-purpose feedback form. It not only allows you to ask a question for Ask a Freebie, but it also lets you submit suggestions for pod tales and for general feedback as well. I have some follow-up this week. The follow-up also came from friend of the show, Chris. He pointed out that during my rundown of the Christmas dinner in the last episode, I didn't mention pigs in blankets. And yeah, that was a huge mistake on my part. We did have pigs in blankets. I do love a pig inside a blanket. I mean, who doesn't like pig wrapped in pig? Like, that's just one of the greatest foods there is. I don't know, though, if I prefer small pigs in blankets or big pigs in blankets. I actually think I prefer larger pigs in blankets. The reason I say this, we went out for a meal yesterday and we had pigs in blankets. We went to a carvery and I actually really enjoyed the pigs in blankets there. They were larger sausages with bacon wrapped around them. And I always have the problem with the smaller ones. Basically, what we did, we bought the pigs in blankets, like ready-made, essentially. We did that with Christmas dinner this year. We bought everything pretty much ready-made. We've started doing that for the last few years, and we've discovered that, for the most part, it's just as good as how we would make it. One of the things we don't do that with the roast potatoes. I'm very particular with roast potatoes. Maybe I'll do an episode on how I cook roast potatoes. I don't know. I mean, I imagine we all cook them very similarly because there is only one way to do really good roast potatoes. But we're not talking about them right now. We're talking about pigs in blankets. We had the smaller pigs in blankets, and I don't know, do you like the bacon always unwraps for me, like when I'm eating it, or the bacon goes crispier than the sausage? Maybe it's just how we cook them. I don't know. But no, I'm a fan of pigs in blankets, but with a big sausage and a big piece of bacon wrapped around it. I can hear you all giggling. It's been icy out there, hasn't it? Yeah. Like, I mean, first things first, what is with people when it comes to ice? They forget how to drive. More accurately, they seem to suddenly think that driving like an ass is a really good idea. Like, I've seen people in the ice that are clearly not driving like they normally would, or not driving in a defensive manner. And they're just like, there's a road near us where it's not even a sharp curve. Like, there's a set of traffic lights. You stop at the traffic lights. You always end up stopped at the traffic lights because they're just those traffic lights that change on a regular basis. And they turn round the corner. They're turning onto a main road that's been gritted, and they still manage to spin their car because for some reason they think setting off from these traffic lights is a great idea. It's because there's a filter system and they're trying to beat the people on the other side. But I saw so many cars over the last few days just full on spin. And funnily enough, most of them, 4x4s, nearly every single one of them. Of course, because of the freezing temperatures, I suppose, they closed school because, you know, why not? Any slight issue, they'll close the school. It's funny, actually, because on the first day, so we had two, like, major days, I would say, of ice. And it was ice. It was one day, like, the first day, it snowed like crazy for about an hour. But the issue was the ice. It was just compacted ice on top of compacted ice on top of compacted ice that had just created a sheet everywhere. So all the side roads in town were completely frozen. The main roads weren't too bad, but they were getting pretty bad. And on the first day, I expected them to get to school and they'd be like, no, that's it, we're not opening, we can't open, because it was pretty treacherous, if I'm being honest. But no, they stayed open. They stayed open for the best part of a day, and they closed at roughly about 1:30. Or they did what they were calling a soft close. So they were basically saying, please come and get your kids, but if you can't get to them, we'll be here till the end of the school day. But we're also closing all the after school clubs, so you need to come and get them like ASAP, really. So I had to go and get the kids, which is fine, you know, not a problem. And then the day after, the roads were not even half as bad as the first day. And they decided to not open school at all. It's funny, actually, the message that came out said, yeah, a number of the teachers have driven down the road this morning and it's just not safe. I was like, I bet those teachers were putting their foot down, lifting the handbrakes up, doing 360s and going, yeah, it's just not safe. We need to go home. Oh, no, we definitely need a snow day. And I don't blame them. They deal with our kids every day, all year. And if they get the opportunity to not do, then I kind of don't blame them to a degree. But yeah, they closed school, so I had to take the day off work to look after the kids, which was nice. We call it pajama day. We didn't really put pajamas. The kids asked if they could put the pajamas back on when they got home. I said, absolutely no way. Because we went to school. It's quite annoying, actually, because they were in breakfast club. So we got to school at 7 a.m. to drop them off. We were able to drive down the road okay. But then we don't drive down the road that the school's on. We drive down the road, like the next road along, just because it's better for parking. Like, there should be nobody driving down the road that school's on. It's a residential street. And people park up on the embankments, they cross over people's driveways, all kinds of stuff. No one should be parking there. So anyway, we didn't. And yeah, we had no problems. We were outside of the school, getting out the car, ready to go in, when we got the message saying, oh yeah, school's closed. So we had to go back home. Yeah, they asked to put the pyjamas on, but I said no. I didn't want them. I don't know, actually. I don't know why I said no. I probably should have said, yeah, they could put the pyjamas on. But I let them put, like, trackies on. I let them get out of the school uniforms. And we had a lazy day. There was a lot of stuff I could have done, really. I did some washing. I don't know. I wasn't feeling my best anyway. So, yeah, we just had a bit of a lazy day. In hindsight, I wish I'd have done a little bit more, because it meant we had a bit of a busier weekend. But, yeah, what you going to do? It's over now, isn't it? They did on that first day, though, the day that they didn't initially close. in the morning, as we were walking up the road to go to school, because we have to walk from the street that we park on, we went past, I can't describe it without giving away the answer to it. Basically, the kids were dead excited because the lake had frozen over. And they're like, oh my God, look at the lake. It looks amazing. We could go skating on that. And I was like, you know, so one, absolutely do not go skating on a frozen lake. Have you not seen every movie ever where they do that? And the kids were like, well, yeah, we wouldn't actually do it, Dad. We don't even have ice skates. I'm like, yeah, all right, fine. And then I said to him, I said, but the other thing as well, just think about this. Is there a lake near your school? And they both went, oh, actually, no, yeah. Yeah, where's, why is there a lake near the school? I'm like, that's the playing field. That's how much it's flooded. They hadn't seen it since all the floods. But yet their school playing field is like, don't even know. It's about 6 foot underwater. And then that water had obviously frozen. It's still under the water now. It's completely completely covered by water. It's a massive field as well. It's the field that they do PE on every year. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But yeah, they initially they thought it was a lake. And they just didn't even think about it. I fell in the snow. That wasn't a good experience. That same day that I dropped the kids off for breakfast club, the day they didn't close the school initially, I'm walking down the street because I went and parked the car up at home. I thought that I don't want to take the car to where I usually take it to the car park because it really felt like it was a potentially going to end up completely snowed in kind of day. And yeah, I slipped. I felt myself going, my leg just went from under me. And I did that thing that you do when you slip. I went, whoop! And I landed on my back. And I had my sandwich box in my bag, which is a glass sandwich box. I landed on that and on my kidney. Oh, man, did it hurt. I smacked my elbow on the floor. I banged my head on the floor, but my head was so covered by the layers that I had on that it wasn't actually that bad. I didn't bang my head. And I just lay there for a second. And I heard two things happen at the same time. I heard a guy in a car go past, go, "Way!" And I felt my Apple Watch vibrate like crazy and go, "It seems like you've had a fall. Are you okay?" Or whatever it says. I couldn't tell what it was saying. And I'm laying there and I'm like, oh no, if I don't press I'm okay, it's going to call the emergency services. I was like, ah. So I sort of rolled over onto my side and I tried pulling my sleeve up to press the button, but I had too many layers on. I had a long sleeve shirt on. I had a hoodie on and I had my coat on and I couldn't get to it. So I rolls over, I jumped up, I dropped my bag on the floor. I had to rip my coat off and then pull my arm out of my sleeve of my hoodie because it was too tight to pull over my watch. And then just as I went to press the button that says, no, I'm okay, my watch crashed and shut down. So it didn't call anybody. I could have just left it. And it got stuck in a boot loop then as well. It took about an hour and it finally came back on. It's been okay since. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I'm running beta version of the software, so it's probably all my fault. I have no complaints there. Sometimes kids try to ask you a question, but they have absolutely no idea what it is that they're trying to ask, or they have no idea of describing it. The other day, Fina said to me, "Dad, you know that shop with the food?" And I looked at her and I went, "The supermarket?" She's like, no, the one at the Trafford Centre that sells food. M&S? Asda? I don't know. Are you talking about a place where you go and buy food to cook or you go and sit in and buy food?" You said, "Well, you can do both." And I'm like, I've no idea. Anyway, it turns out she meant the cafe in Primark. The problem is, but by the time she'd worked out what she was trying to tell me or what she was trying to, the place she was trying to work out, she'd forgotten what she wanted to tell me. So I still have no idea what that was about. But that happens a lot. Does that happen to you as well? She's like, "Do you know that place?" And like the most vague description of something. But eventually, I don't know, you kind of get there. But yeah, she'd completely forgotten what it was she wanted to actually ask me about. Time to learn something. Let's all learn something new, shall we? I mean, I've obviously already learned this because I wrote this thing. But I want to share it with you. I heard about this just a couple of days ago, actually. This is not what I initially had planned for this section. But I don't know, I just found it very interesting. And I thought it'd be nice to start a new year off on something nice. I want to talk to you about Charlie Douglas. Charlie Douglas is the inventor of something called the Laugh Box. And the laugh box is the thing that creates the studio laughter that you hear in old TV shows. You may have heard of it called canned laughter. And this is his story. Charlie Douglas, born in Mexico in 1910 to an American family, didn't seem destined to become the maestro of merriment. His father, an electrical engineer, moved the family to Nevada, where young Charlie would eventually follow in his dad's footsteps, earning a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from the University of Nevada. But instead of wiring circuits, Charlie found himself engineering smiles as a sound technician with CBS Radio in Los Angeles. During World War II, he took a detour to develop shipboard radar systems for the Navy. Before the age of binge-watching, comedy audiences laughed together in real life. But when television made its debut, producers faced a peculiar problem. Live audiences didn't always find the jokes funny. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of the times we don't find the jokes funny. Enter Charlie Douglas, a man who refused to leave laughs to chance, noticing the erratic chuckles, or, you know, lack thereof. Douglas introduced a revolutionary fix known as sweetening. If a joke flopped, he'd sprinkle in a pre-recorded guffaw. Too much giggling, he'd fade it out, like a conductor guiding an orchestra of mirth. This technique debuted subtly on live shows like the Jack Benny program in the early days, flying under the radar. But in the late 1950s, as sitcoms transitioned to videotape, Douglas's magic became indispensable. Editing left awkward pauses in the audio, and Charlie filled them with perfectly timed laughter. Soon, even comedians began to appreciate the utility of a laughter safety net. Legend has it, Milton Berle once quipped during editing, "See? I told you it was funny," after Douglas salvaged a joke with a well-placed guffaw. By the early 1960s, Douglas's skills were in such demand that his laugh track wizardry was no longer merely enhancing moments, it was creating entire studio audiences out of thin air. Shows like Bewitched, The Munsters, and The Beverly Hillbillies showcased his work, while more subdued programs like The Andy Griffith Show kept things chuckle light. Of course, not everyone loved the idea of fabricated laughter, but Douglas's services became an industry standard. To preserve the mystique, Douglas operated in secrecy. His pièce de résistance was the laugh box, a 2-foot-tall contraption that looked like a musical organ, but produced a symphony of giggles, titters, and roars. Guarded like a state secret, the box was padlocked, and only family members knew its inner workings. It was so cloaked in mystery that TV Guide once called it the most sought-after but well-concealed box in the world. The laugh box became such a cultural icon that, when unearthed in 2010, it even made its way to the Antiques Roadshow, where it was appraised at $10,000, a small price to pay for the machine that kept the Munsters funny. As technology evolved, so did the laugh box. Charlie's son, Bob, tinkered with digital replacements, eventually creating a laptop-sized version of the laugh box in the 1990s. By then, the device contained hundreds of digitized human sounds, making it the Swiss Army knife of sitcom reactions. Charlie Douglas retired to Laguna Beach, California in 1970 and lived there peacefully until his passing in 2003 at the age of 93. Wow. Do I want to make it to 93? I don't know. I was just thinking it'd be nice to make it that far, but I don't know. Depends how healthy I am, I suppose. He left behind a legacy of laughter, manufactured or not, in 1992. The Academy of Television Arts and Sciences honoured him with an Emmy for lifetime technical achievement, solidifying his place as television's unsung hero of hilarity. As for the Douglas family, they kept the laughter alive. His son Bob ran Northridge Electronics until 2012, ensuring the chuckles continued to echo in sitcoms long after Charlie's time. Charlie Douglas may not have written the jokes, but he made sure someone laughed at them. Whether you find laugh tracks charming or cheesy, there's no denying the impact of a man who engineered the sound of joy. This week's pick of the week is the Crimpet. Now, you may be thinking, in fact, I know you're thinking because I was thinking it too. I've already done that, but no. They've come up with a new one. They've now got the Crimpet Toasty Maker. I saw this and I immediately bought it. The Crimpets are a huge, huge win in our house for quick lunches. Sometimes tea, we do pizza crimpets. You can actually buy, I've seen them in Aldi. I've never seen them anywhere else. Mission do, You know the wraps that you can get? They do wraps that are thicker, like almost like thin pizza bases. They make really good calzones. And guess what you can make a calzone in? In a crimp pit. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you probably guessed that, didn't you? They're amazing. They're absolutely brilliant. But no, the new Crimpit toasty maker, it's essentially what it sounds like. It's, you make a toasty out of it. But, you know, Crimpit style. So you fill it with all your ingredients. You push it into the little machine. The machine seals it all together. And then you can either air fry it or stick it in a toaster. You get a little, like a gauze with it to put into your toaster just in case it splits. You can pull everything out. But I've not yet had one split, so we're good. Yeah, pick of the week is the new Crimpit maker. I'll include a link to the Crimpit website in the show notes, just in case you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. If you're a member of That's a Freebie Plus, remember to stick around because there will be a after show section. If you're not a member of That's a Freebie Plus, now is the time to consider it. Head to thatsafreebie.com for more information and to join. But on that note, I'm going to leave you all with one final thought. Did you hear about the fruit that stole money from a bank? It was a strawberry.